National Kidney Foundation. And we had published the paper, and to James's credit, he was lightning fast when we really needed data. And so it was, we had this stretch. Do you remember this, James, right? We're just meeting on Zoom all the time. And it was during COVID. And, you know, this is like, I think he was in Houston, I was in Boston, and he was at home, and I was here at home. And, you know, Harvard is shut down at the time. And this is right when COVID hit, and then most of that summer, basically, 2020 summer. And so we had all these like late night Zooms, and we're working a lot on this paper, got it out. And then it was in time where we were both able to brief the national task force that was making the decision on which equation is preferable, what approach is preferable, should be recommended nationally to move forward. I really think there was impact there, because it got to that audience, and then it was cited and helped inform the way that they decided, and ultimately made recommendations on a new equation that was refit without race as the way forward. So I guess I'll say yes. I think, you know, humility, hard to predict, but also several paths to impact here. And I think reaching those clinical bodies that are making the recommendations and the guidelines has been, I think, something that we've been pleased to see our work really kind of land in front of those groups. And so I think even at the American Thoracic Society meeting, one of the questions that we got in front of the audience, I think, was from the first author of you know, of the main several of the main papers of the task force for lung function. And so I think engagement with those groups is very important, and our perspective is that the data inserted into those conversations can really help as well.
That was Harvard Medical School Assistant Professor Rajmohan Rai and postdoctoral fellow James Diao speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg about a study from the New England Journal of Medicine that is the first to show the implications of adopting race-neutral equations when doctors test for lung function. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. If you're able, please go to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution in support of the critical work of community radio. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kboo.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBOO 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here at KBOO 90.7 FM.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm your host, Jamie Partridge, and this evening we're reading from lesson number 4 from Secrets of a Successful Organizer, a book with generations of knowledge put together by Alexandra Bradbury, Mark Brenner, and Jane Slaughter, a Labor Notes book which is available online at labornotes.org/secrets. Secrets of a Successful Organizer, Lesson 4, Choosing an Issue. In many workplace situations, the issue chooses you. Management is doing something awful and you feel the need to stop it. Too much overtime, an unfair rule, discrimination. But maybe there are so many problems where you work, you hardly know where to begin. You're angry about a lot of things. You sense that others are angry too, but maybe about different issues than you are. If you're thinking long term, you want to get beyond solving just one problem. You want to create an atmosphere where people feel and exercise their power. Anyone can nip problems in the bud. You want to make the union a living presence in the workplace. Your first fight should reinforce the organizing impulse and give people confidence to go further. This is a story. The Right to Pray. When organizers from the service employees and the Teamsters started reaching out to airport workers in SeaTac, Washington, they faced a big challenge, Jonathan Rosenbaum recalled. The single largest group of low-wage airport workers hailed from Somalia. While their conditions were lousy, they weren't quite ready to trust us. Workers in a few areas of the airport were union already, but unions weren't seen as particularly responsive to African workers, especially Muslims. Years earlier, when Hertz Rent-A-Car suspended a group of Somali shuttle drivers for going to pray, it was an immigrant rights group, not their union, that filed a discrimination complaint to win back their jobs. Praying 5 times a day is mandatory for observant Muslims. Finally, Hertz management agreed to treat prayer breaks, which last only a few minutes, like a smoke break or a bathroom break. Just take it and come back to work, no clock out necessary. The company even provided a spare room for prayer. When management decided to push back on the prayer breaks, the union got another chance to do the right thing. One day, when workers went to pray as usual, the manager told them to clock out. Shuttle driver Zainab Awais recalled her manager standing with his arms extended, blocking the prayer room. "If you guys pray, you go home," he declared. The workers appealed to their union, Teamsters Local 117. This time, the union organized a multi-faith prayer inn at the Hertz counter and invited the media. Muslims, Christians, and Jews joined union and community activists praying while holding signs that read, "Respect me, respect my religion," Rosenblum wrote. Union officers and the Hertz shop steward went on national news shows. They brought in lawyers. You can imagine the negative blowback the Teamsters got locally from some of their members and also in the national blogosphere. But their willingness to take on this fight provided to be a turning point in the relationship between the unions at the airport and the East African community. After the prayer end, community doors began to open. We were invited to conduct union meetings in the mosques. Imams delivered Friday sermons exhorting people to get civically involved. Workers warmed up to organizers at the airport saying, "I heard you were at the mosque," or "Imam told us about the union." The airport campaign gained more momentum. 2 years later, when the unions worked to pass a ballot initiative for a $15 minimum wage in SeaTac, these relationships were crucial. The campaign registered 900 new voters in the small city, almost all of them new immigrants or children of immigrants. Probably more than 200 were registered outside Friday prayers, Rosenblum says. We won the ballot initiative by 77 votes. Striking a chord. The Teamster local leaders who organized the prayer inn at Hertz didn't set out to pick a good issue and organize around it. They just reacted on principle when they saw that members' rights were being violated. But as it turned out, this problem struck a deep chord with a group of members who hadn't felt much positive connection with the union before. The people who got involved discovered values in common They formed new relationships of mutual respect and trust. It was a great organizing issue as well as a righteous fight. The same principles hold true when you're looking to get together, get things going in any workplace. The next four secrets are your criteria for picking a good organizing issue. A good organizing issue is widely felt, is deeply felt, is winnable, builds the union, and builds leaders. Choosing an issue that's widely felt. How common is the problem? How many workers face this situation? Many people feel that this is a real problem and agree with the solution you're pursuing. If it affects only a handful of workers on the third shift who nobody else ever sees, it's probably not the best place to start. When managers in the New York City bike share system announced new schedules for mechanics, it didn't take long to spot a widely felt issue. Everyone went ballistic, said organizer Nick Bedell. No matter which schedule you picked, you were forced to work a weekend day. No one wanted to work weekends, and they didn't see why they should. Their job was to repair a fleet of bicycles that generally broke at a predictable rate. Fixing them Monday through Friday was working fine. The mechanics, who recently formed a union with Transport Workers Local 100, wrote up a protest petition, boycotted the picking procedure, and pushed for alternative schedules. They won. Beware of an issue that pits one group of members against another. If such a conflict has everyone fired up but on different sides, look for the underlying problem that management is causing and a solution both groups can get behind. Here's another story. Show that many people care. When petitioning, have signers write down their department so everyone can see the breadth of support. At a hospital, nurses got two blank books and wrote in them about a certain issue, signing their quotes. They took the books around the hospital to demonstrate that support was growing and to get more nurses to write their quotes in the books. Next, the nurses made huge posters proclaiming their support with their pictures and signatures. They left blank spaces for new supporters and took the posters to meetings where people could add their pictures. Choose an issue that's deeply felt. Is this an issue that people feel strongly enough about to actually do something? It's not enough that many people agree. It's if none are really hot under the collar. Chele Fulmore, a Teamster steward at UPS, tells of the time management changed the rules for taking lunch and fired a worker for not fully understanding the new procedure. His fellow workers were infuriated. No one else understood the procedure either, and now the stakes were high. Everyone feared messing up and losing their jobs. So most of the drivers signed a petition saying that the manager had never explained the new rule, which made him look incompetent to his superiors. The fired worker got his job back. The Hertz Prayin is another great example. The issue mattered profoundly to the workers affected and to their whole community. It wasn't just about breaks, it was about their religious faith. Organizer Ahmed Ali reflected afterwards that it's these kinds of underlying values, faith, justice, human dignity, freedom of speech, that can hold us together in the long run. Could this grievance be an organizing issue? If you're a union steward, people bring you their workplace problems all the time. After listening to a concern, you probably ask them to take a series of steps. Write up the facts, identify which contract provisions are being violated, go with you to talk to the supervisor, and if the problem isn't resolved, work with you to file a grievance. All good steps. But there's one more question you should always ask. Anyone else in this same situation? That question could change everything, says organizer Ellen David Friedman. You could be on your way to finding an issue that's widely and deeply felt. Not every grievance turns out to be a good organizing issue, of course, but if the worker thinks others may be affected, ask her to talk with co-workers and keep track of what she finds out. If others are concerned too, she could get them together to talk about how to solve the problem. Maybe this should be a group grievance presented to the supervisor by a whole delegation. It could be the seed of an action campaign. Choose an issue that's winnable. It's hard to know for sure whether you will win, but it's possible to have a good idea whether you can. If you're a new group, you want to err on the side of choosing an easy issue, says organizer Marcia Niemeyer.
You want to bring more people in, so you need to have a win to inspire those who will be skeptical. You want people to learn that they can make a difference. So your group should match your demand to the power you already have. Ask those these questions. What do we want? Who can say yes? And what's for the decision maker? What's the price of saying yes? What do we want? We need to agree on the definition of what a win is. So your group should talk early on about what you consider an acceptable solution, including compromises. Who can say yes? Assess exactly who can fix the problem. Is it a lower level manager? Or that manager's boss? Or is it the CEO? If it's the CEO, Niemeyer says, you've got a long way to go. Managers' personalities, past histories, prejudices, and stubbornnesses will come into this assessment too. For the decision maker, what's the price of saying yes? Consider the dollars and cents, but also how much the manager has riding on the issue politically or personally. Is this an issue that she feels strongly about and wouldn't want to lose face over? Or if she gave in, would it cause her other problems? Could you imagine her giving in simply so the workers could stop bugging her? You might be surprised how often managers have some wiggle room. They just haven't been pressed on the issue. Have workers in the other departments ever won on this issue? If so, you have a precedent. Management can give in and the sky didn't fall. How did those workers win? How high can you push the price of saying no? How many people would be willing to do something, and how far will those people go? Take into account who's affected by the problem, how strongly they feel about it, what actions they've taken in the past, and whether the relevant leaders are on board with your plan. To win, you'll need to make it harder for the decision maker to keep saying no than to say yes. Would that take five people marching into the office together, 25 signing a petition, or a majority threatening a strike? The more pressure you can bring to bear, the more issues will become winnable.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to KBOO Portland Labor Radio. We're reading the fourth chapter of Secrets of a Successful Organizer, Finding an Issue. And if you are enjoying this show and count on Labor Radio for news and views from a union perspective, and you appreciate KBOO, non-corporate, listener-supported community radio, think about donating, becoming a member of KBOO. Make the world a better place. Think about joining KBOO like joining a union. It's a choice. It's an open shop. You can benefit from the information, the tools, and inspiration that KBOO provides, and you can be a free rider. Or you can join your sisters and brothers and siblings in solidarity to build a stronger, more effective voice for social change. That's up to you. Join now, kboo.fm/donate.
Here's another story. The money was there. A public employee union in New Jersey was negotiating a first contract for group home workers who made $9 an hour. They found out that the state government, which funded the group homes, had budgeted $1 an hour to raise the workers' pay. The money was there, but management hadn't passed it along. That gave the workers confidence that they could win. They made up a chant about the director of the program, Mr. Diminot, and protested outside the management offices. Hi-ho, Dimino, we've been looking high and low. Our dollar, where's our dollar? During a softball game that the managers participated in, workers organized a scavenger hunt for the dollar. They pinned a dollar to their shirts and wore them to work on Solidarity Fridays. Together, they filled out charts of things they would have done if they had gotten a dollar and faxed them to management. When the contract was signed, workers did not get a dollar. They got $1.60. Short-term and long-term goals. You should usually pick the low-hanging fruit for your first target, but a small winnable fight could work in tandem with a big not-yet-winnable one. Niemeyer gives the example of hospital workers who are simultaneously fighting for a tougher goal, more staffing, and an easier one, keeping more supplies on hand. Management won't fix staffing yet, she says, but they will fix supplies. And it's partly because they know we will continue to pressure them about staffing. They think they can distract us from our bigger goal by giving in on this small one. Fast food workers across the country have staged walkouts and rallies for very high goals, a $15 minimum wage and a union. But in the middle of that long-term goal, at a McDonald's in Manhattan, workers took action on a more easily winnable issue. One scorching July day, a worker fainted from the heat. The crew walked out, quickly drawing press attention because fast food workers were already in the news. Workers told reporters the air conditioning had been broken for at least 9 years. The franchise owner showed up with a fix the same afternoon. Choose an issue that builds the union. Consider how this fight will build your capacity for future fights. Will the issue attract leaders or groups who haven't been very involved? Will it build solidarity between groups? Will it give you the chance to try an action that's one step beyond what you've done before? Will the solution lay the groundwork for future improvements? At a Los Angeles hospital, stewards were demoralized and few and far between. They got together to make a plan to find more leaders and rebuild their union. They wanted their first organizing issue to be a good one. After meeting for weeks, they boiled down their criterion. They would pick a small work area of 10 to 30 workers where there was a problem that people felt strongly about and where at least one leader was already a union activist or had the potential to become one. It was getting close to December and management announced that workers who were sick for even one day that month would have to bring a doctor's note. Longstanding policy had been to require a note only after a three-day absence. Bingo, people were furious. In one ward with 27 workers, people wrote up a petition asking for a meeting with management. Everyone signed it. The group asked management to meet with 12 to 15 people. Management said, "You've got to be kidding, we're short-staffed." Organizer Paul Crable remembers, managers agreed to meet with four. But soon after the meeting started, two more people came down from the ward to join in. "We're on a break," they said. The six workers took turns explaining how the new policy would cause them problems. Managers kept looking nervously at their watches, and after 15 minutes, they said that the workers on break had to return to the ward. I told management they were going to return, but first they needed to tell their story. As they were telling their stories, two more workers began their breaks and came into the meeting. Management was clearly upset. "Those first two workers have to go back now," they said emphatically. "Their break is over. We can't have so many people off the ward at once." "You know," we responded, "he's just finishing up now." "We know, he's just finishing up now." Then the worker talked another 2 or 3 minutes. The meetings lasted 2 hours with most of the department rotating through. "We pushed the envelope as much as possible," Crable said, "to have people staying in the meeting as long as they could." The action was a success. Management lightened up the doctor's note policy, and because so many people had participated, it was a success at building the union, too. One new steward was recruited, and three new people volunteered to work with her. Here's another story. Defending breaks. If management is infringing on your breaks, you could print up small cards with the contract clause that guarantees break time and hand the card to any supervisor who tries to guilt trip someone into skipping her break. Or a big group could all go on break at exactly the same time one day. Or they could walk through the worksite ringing a bell or blowing whistles to announce break time. Even when you lose, you gain something. At the end of the day, from each battle, we want three things: victory, lessons learned, a stronger organization. Victory: did you get a solid improvement in your working conditions? Lessons learned: did we get smarter about the forces we're facing and what it will take to win? Did we hone our tactical skills or our understanding of strategy? A stronger organization: did we build personal connections of trust or alliances that can be used again? Have more leaders step forward. Each fight should build off the last. It often happens that we don't win the concrete game we wanted, but we do come out smarter and better organized, which makes it more likely that we can win next time. It's an organizer's job to point out to coworkers what was won. We didn't get our breaks back this time, but now that we have all these connections on night shift that we didn't have before, let's start thinking about how we can try again. Most people are only looking for the first kind of win, the immediate change they can see, paying attention to consolidating the lessons, and the organization too. Why grievances are not enough. If only we could count on contract enforcement to keep our workplaces trouble-free. But every time management gets a chance, it will encroach into territory the union has won, taking away things we thought the contract protected. The contract reflects the balance of power between management and workers at the moment it was signed, but not necessarily the balance today. Simply filing a grievance doesn't build power. It's not usually a collective activity. While the grievance moves from step to step, the members have nothing to do but wait. Besides, grievances can fix only a tiny fraction of the injustices that go on in any workplace. Think about the individual workers whose rights are violated. Most won't file a grievance. Some are still on probation or already facing discrimination or simply afraid they'll be marked as troublemakers. Some don't realize they have the right to grieve. Even a good steward can't comb the shop at getting all the shy and fearful workers to submit their grievances. In any case, the steward won't have time to file them all. She has to pick her battles. So of the many grievances that might have been filed, only a handful actually are. Months later, a few are finally won, but only the workers involved ever know about them. Even those with similar problems may not realize a grievance happened. Most are left stewing over wrongs that go unaddressed. That's why this book teaches you how to back up grievances with shop floor action or bypass the grievance system altogether. There still won't be time to address every issue, but the more people participate in solving a problem, the more they will develop the skills and confidence to take on other problems, and the union's power will grow. You're developing a union culture in the workplace, not just at the union hall where people expect to participate in defending the contract and defending each other. Exercise. Evaluate an organizing issue. Have you started mulling over some possible organizing issues at your workplace? Pick one and answer these questions to help you think through its organizing potential. What's the problem? What's our proposed solution? Is this issue widely felt? How many people are technically affected by the problem? How many people feel like it affects them? Is it deeply felt? How much do people care about this issue? What are they willing to do about it? Is it winnable? Who's the decision maker who could say yes to the solution? What would it cost this person to say yes? Consider not just the budget, but also the decision maker's personal and political investment in the issue. How much pressure will we have to bring to overcome this person's resistance? Who's already involved in organizing on this issue and who would need to get involved? How far are members willing to go on this issue? Far enough to win? How will this fight build a union? Will it teach members a new lesson or skill, or give us a chance to go one step farther than we've already gone? Will it involve groups or leaders who are underrepresented in our organizing so far? Will it build solidarity between groups? Will the solution set a good precedent for future fights? Now you know how to pick the right issue. In lesson 5, an escalating campaign, you'll learn how to make it an action plan to push management to address your goal.
Well, that wraps it up for this evening's KBOO Labor Radio. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host. You've been listening to Secrets of a Successful Organizer, Chapter 4, Finding an Issue. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline. Thank you.
Community Radio.
KBOO, Portland.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of the Global